Back in the early 1970s, I had the pleasure, while on active duty, of having a bedbug infestation occur in a barracks at Fort Dix, New Jersey, soon after I had arrived there. I'd only been on active duty a few years and a few months, and this happened in March of 1973. There were 5 rooms infested, and there were 14 basic trainees who were bitten by these bugs. It took a little while for somebody to figure out that there was something a little unusual about that, but by the time I got there and collected some of them and brought them back, we found out that, well, this is what the barracks looked like. We found out that they were bed bugs, and these were a little bit more primitive than the basic training barracks are today. This is what the interior walls looked like. They were lightly painted, what I call cinder block concrete blocks, and some places they were much rougher than that, and very often they had cracks between the blocks, which made for an excellent place to go back in, around, and among. Good bedbug harborage. I had never seen a live bedbug before myself, so this was neat new stuff for me. To me, they were a living myth, and they were rare enough that my boss, a fairly senior preventive medicine colonel at the time, MD, had not seen live bedbugs for several years himself, and it was important enough to him that we put out a little note on it, on what we did, what we found, and the control strategies and techniques at that time. It is available out there. My website where I work right now has that, among other things, on the literature research system. They have a very unusual behavior and biology. I found them very fascinating for all these reasons. They practice what is called traumatic insemination, and now that Dr. Benson has read Eusinger, he knows all the details about traumatic insemination. And it's a bit unusual in that the males insert their intermittent organ through the body wall of a particular place on the abdomen of the female, and then essentially ejaculate their semen into the body hemiseal, and it migrates to the primary reproductive system. So that's a bit unusual, and each species of bed bugs is unique, at least a little bit, in how they do that and where they do that and the structures involved. They have a very long survival, and once they have fed at least once, even the first instar nymphs have been recorded by several older authors as surviving for longer than a year in a controlled lab setting. Adults certainly can live more than a year. On average, it would be about half that because conditions fluctuate and other things get involved. In trying to raise them and keep them alive, there are some other pitfalls that can cause them to die sooner too. I found them very interesting to watch, and I especially like watching their host-seeking behavior. By the way, I have personally observed these to move, with marked specimens, to move much farther than 20 feet one way at night to feed and return engorged in that same night to places that they were hiding. One case where we actually marked them with fluorescent dust, they went by a direct measurement of the most direct route down the surfaces and all that. We came up with a little bit more than 100 feet distance, and of about 120 or so that we marked and released at the wall, there were at least 7 that had fed that night. Now I'm assuming they all fed on the volunteer that was on that same bunk, but they were fed anyway. We later did some things with shorter distances and got a higher number of them coming back, as I say. Anyway, I found them intriguing and still do. And of course, they're not known to spread any human diseases. That would have dissuaded me significantly. I collected several hundred of those, and I call them my captive population, not really a colony per se. I keep them in various jars, which you'll see in a moment. I use these over time to conduct limited observations on myself, sometimes other volunteers, but sometimes on available lab animals. I worked in a lab at 2 different times, actually 3 different times, where we had mosquitoes or other blood-feeding arthropods that we fed on lab rats, chickens, or in one case pigeons that were used just for that purpose, maintained in an animal husbandry place and used for those purposes. And I tried various little things, quantitative things about how long it took them to feed on this or that, how long each stage took to feed, how many eggs they produced. And they actually, my population routinely and repeatedly produced about 3 or 4% more eggs on chickens than they did on me. But they usually got fed on me, so that was, maybe it was just the unusual food that was, they were going out to dinner. I noted their survival under various conditions. I accidentally kept them in a colder room for several years in the vicinity of 45 degrees Fahrenheit, often below that, in a basement. And I would regularly feed these about once a month. You'll see how in a little bit. But in the literature, it says that they stop moving at around 50 or 51 degrees Fahrenheit. This room, I don't recall it ever being warm enough to sit there long without, or work around in that basement without having some sort of a coat on or some sort of a sweater. And the measured temperatures several times were at 42 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit. But every time I went to feed my bugs, they were very aggressive, moved a lot, fed readily, and the nearest I can come up with, discussing it with some other people who have since reared these and other bugs, is that I had sort of selected for bugs that survived in that setting. So there must be some plasticity to their ability to survive, and maybe field colonies or field populations, maybe they do stop moving at 50. I haven't observed that many of the field populations or manipulated them. But I know my own were active at a much colder temperature. And that'll get me to one other point in one of the other later moments. I did look at their host preferences. They tend to go to a warmer host. They'll go to my son's pet dog, given the even choice between it and myself, equal distance. My wife doesn't know that. By the way, I've been raising them for 32 years, or I'm sorry, 34 years now, and unfortunately there have been three instances in that time that they have in fact escaped in my house. The last one was the worst. The first two were, I had them in other rooms or somewhere where they were only feeding on me or any local rats or a pet that happened by. The last time they were established on our bed, and that led to some serious emotional trauma. Needless to say, I was in the habit at that time of going to bed about an hour after my wife. She would watch the late news. I would stay up to watch the beginning, the monologue of one of those late shows, and then I would go to bed. So I wasn't being bitten. I would have noticed it and known what it was. By the time I got to bed, all the hungry ones were in fact satiated. And she had these funny welts at various places on her body. And so she found a live one once about 2 or 3 weeks after she began to complain. I didn't understand the complaints. But anyway, she found a live one and brought it in and asked me, "What is this?" And I said, "Oh." And she said, "This is a bed bug, isn't it?" And so we proceeded to take some aggressive, not strictly chemical, but some very aggressive steps to eliminate them, and we did in fact eliminate them. But it kind of broke my heart, because when I went in and did the first look through at the bed and bedposts and everything, the spots and the distribution was just classic. I wanted to stop and take a picture, but I didn't have the nerve. Anyway, I have since also looked a little bit at my own reactions and other people's, and the reactions of certain other animals I've fed them on. I sort of treated them over the time from about 75 to 97 as mainly novel critters. I kept them. I used them. Again, I watched them. I dabbled with them. Essentially, they were a sort of a living toy, sort of, and I was indeed fascinated with them. I used them as novel display insects to talk to schools, nature centers, Boy Scouts, Boy Scout groups, and the general public. In fact, in 2001 at the National Boy Scout Jamboree, there was a composite group of people, sort of a combined scout group, that came through Washington, D.C. and stopped at a hostel there, and then came on down to the Jamboree at Fort A.P. Hill, and they, within about 2 weeks, had established a pretty widespread little center of bed bugs. They apparently picked them up at that hostel, and it was a very interesting follow-up on that, but we eventually, with the help of, I think, a couple of people, military people in the room, at least one person back there, we eventually got them taken care of, and it was just a sort of a novel thing. We even had a little patch made that said, "Don't let the bed bugs bite," and gave it to, made sure those of us who worked with it kicked in bucks and got a patch. Boy Scouts are crazy about patches. Patch that said, "Don't let the bed bugs bite," and the Jamboree name and year, and gave it to everybody who was in that subcamp. So, but they can be fun. And I gradually, over time, developed what were, for my setting, the most effective techniques and devices to rear them, maintain them, display them, and I'll show you a few of those after a little bit here. I took a number of images, and I got better at doing that, but at least a few of my hundreds of images turned out to be reasonably good. I even was able to capture a couple of images of the mating, and the first slide of this presentation had an image of that with the male curved around the body of the female. And I've tended to share these with people fairly generously over time. I developed this as my sort of my rearing devices, and there are reasons why the ends of those cardboard inserts are cut at an angle. I didn't have carbon dioxide to use to knock them down, so I had to work with them sort of in the open, and they tend to crawl up to a point, so if I bent those so that the points were away from the side of the lip, I didn't even have to do anything. I could just work with the open bottle. But these are techniques I had to just pick up over time. And the screens, they have to be smaller than 40 by 40. The first Instars can get out of 40 by 40. Actually, some got out of a 42 by 42 mesh. What you're seeing there is either 50 by 50 mesh. In one case there, it's stainless steel screen I had left over from a different experiment with mosquitoes. And the other is plankton screen, 60 by 60 or 65 by 65 mesh. And you have to buy about 2 yards of it from places like BioQuip or someplace like that. And 2 yards will do a lot of these things, more than I'll fill for a while. But these techniques work. I did find that because the jars distort over time and the lids get gunked up, you have to actually put a piece of tape over the outside or they'll slip through. So these are some tips for any of you that want to try raising these yourselves. How am I doing on time? Okay. This is how I feed them. I usually use my leg anymore because people look at you funny when you're scratching out in public like that. They don't feel so bad if you reach down and scratch your leg. That's not as obvious. But in prepping these back there, I have a good reaction to them. And those of you up close can probably see there's a red circle that I put that jar against my arm here just in the back of the room a while ago. I react immediately, but I still react with the slow, the delayed response as well. About 2 days from now, actually a little less than that, this will begin to itch very intensely. So. And that lasts for about a day, day and a half now. Yeah. In this case, each of those spots is for about 5 minutes. But for them to fill up and feed, it was on Dr. Benson's slide, but it takes about 3 minutes for the youngest instar, the newly hatched ones, to fill up, and it takes 12 minutes in the literature, but mine, I usually count on 15 for the adults to fill up. Adult females get much bigger than the others. And for demonstration display items, I've given you three of these to look at. That screen on the bottom allows people to watch them feed, allows people to watch them move, and you can see where they've laid eggs and how they've laid eggs on the substrate. And rather than throwing out the ones that are dead, the ones that will actually have all their parts, I pickle them and save them for people to see that haven't seen them. One thing I would mention, and this is an oddity that I discovered, it's not really in the literature, but it does seem to be always the case, or nearly always the case, if you're looking for bed bugs and you're looking at dead specimens, if they are if they have laid around for 3 or 4 days and they get slightly disturbed or shaken, the last two segments of the adult's antennae will drop off. So you won't have that key character of the third segment. It'll be gone. And it doesn't take very much disturbance of a dried specimen for that to happen. So if somebody brings you old dead specimens to look at, if they have been dead 2 days or longer, they probably won't have those last two segments on their antenna that you may need to identify them or to help identify them. Okay, I didn't really start, I sort of helped people along and offered them out and showed people things and all that, but I didn't really become very serious about it until in 1997. I was then in the employ of the National Pest Management Association. I was their senior, I call it token, bug person. I was the only one in their staff that one person could recognize this was an insect, but that was about as deep as Greg went in seriousness. Actually, he's a good guy, and he knows a lot about structures. Some of the folks in the audience know him, so he actually knows quite a bit for a food quality person. He knows quite a bit about insects, and he's learning more. And he learned quite a bit by the time he and I parted company. But most of the other people, it really was a challenge. They were entomologically challenged. So at that time. Questions like some of these folks, and Judy Black particularly, and I believe even Dr. Potter called me once or twice early on when they first ran into these things, hoping I had some quick answer, but I didn't. And Mike knows that. He wrestled with the advice I gave him, as limited as it was. But I shared stuff with him along. And in 1997, there was a recreational lodge. You would recognize the organization that ran that, but so I won't name them. But they were in Bridgeton, Maine, and they had a log building. It's not just your typical log cabin. This was a three-story in places, log, sort of a winter, almost a retreat, almost like a great big hostel in the woods, and it had gaps between the log walls for insulation, and it was very heavily infested with bed bugs. I was called by a very, very progressive pest control person in Maine, and he's really strong on IPM and everything. He called me and sent me specimens right away, and this was the biggest infestation I think I've ever had to try to help somebody deal with. And he finally, since the typical things were not working, the log hut couldn't be, or whatever they called the name of it, they wouldn't let him drill into that. He told him he was going to have to be able to treat in those voids, and he tried several things, and they weren't very cooperative. Finally, he was able to convince them he had to do some drastic things, and he got permission, had to get permission from the state to allow him specifically to use a chemical product that was, at that time, no longer registered for bed bugs. It was a special use for that particular problem. And if it hadn't been that that organization had such political clout and somebody higher up than the state level of their organization decided they needed the help, they would not have probably been able to resolve the issue. They ended up using a fairly high concentration of Vapona as a part of their concentrated and multi-layered effort. And this guy's one of the better IPM people in New England, and he swears by it, but they reached a point where they just had to do something. So anyway, that was my sort of wake-up call. Hey, there are bed bugs out there. I had seen cases before of infestations along in the military and civilian world as I'd moved around, but they were just sort of spotty here and there. So I wasn't really of much help to anybody. But I did provide information, references, images, whomever. I've provided such things to state governments, usually cooperative extension folks and public health people, their offices, and I could list them places, but I was surprised when I went back through and made up a list from my phone logs, so I may have missed some. I don't think I entered any twice. I came up with 54 plus, at least 54 I could solidly verify in the last 10 years, or actually 9.5 years, cases where I had provided significant amounts of information, references, images, whatever, and in many cases preserved specimens for them to use, to teach with, to show people, to use for their own reference purposes. And I've provided live bugs, mainly to universities, but also to pest control firms who give talks to their own people at least 32 times. Technical talks I've given to, partly through the NPMA, partly through state organizations and private companies who have a regional presence, at least 49 times. I've been involved with senior author of four and junior author of another publication specifically on bed bugs and specifically involving my bed bugs. Reference populations that I've offered to people, including CDC. There's a USDA attempt to test some repellents. I won't go into the details here. And other universities and researchers at least 23 different times. And I'm not counting some of the commercial people that I just gave them a start to. There were two TV videos and several that the NPMA put out that I wasn't involved in. But there were, my bugs have been featured in several of those. And I've done IDs more than 150 times that I could document. And more than 200 times I've done phone or email technical consults. And I'm not saying this to brag about myself. I'm just trying to point out that in one case, this unusual situation and this colony, my bed bugs, have touched and hopefully helped all these situations. Certainly a number of them in the first few years of that time would have not had the resource for a head start that I was able to provide them or help them get. I'm suggesting in general that if you encounter, any of you, a very interesting critter, learn all you can about it. If you're interested in it, you don't know. A lot of other people may be too, but it doesn't matter. If you're interested in it, that's enough. Keep your interest going indefinitely. As long as you're interested in the critter, keep it up. If opportunities arise, I suggest and recommend that you share your observations, maybe specimens, images, whatever you have, with others, and you may actually provide them some significant help. Now, after this question slide, if anyone's interested, I would show some other slides, but I don't plan to show them with an extensive list of references and that. I'll just let that go and take questions.